So we are going to have 1 hour discussion, and so we have an appointed topic for the day. Are we still with the Purabedha Sutta?
No. Since we moved on to the next one now.
What is the next?
It's called Attananda Sutta.
Attananda Sutta. So we finished Purabedha Sutta. It's very interesting. It's a long one. But anyway, before going to the traditional one, if you have anything to report or if you have anything to suggest as a topic or any comments, we'll take a few minutes at the beginning of the discussion.
Authorized Swaminathan, I'm Kumara here.
Kumara from Oman. Yes.
Yes, one thing. Mante, there's one report we have received. With your permission, I can present it.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Dear Bhante, I am 18 years old and this is my sitting experience, sitting meditation. I sat down and closed my eyes. Instantly, my mind was filled with thoughts and I found it difficult to focus on my breath and come to the present. Throughout the whole meditation, I kept thinking about the future, so I focused on that. And at times, my mind would focus on my breath. However, soon the thoughts would rise again and I will drift my attention to them. This happened throughout the whole meditation process, which turned out to be short because I kept getting distracted. Please advise me. Terwan Saranai. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Good that young people practicing and from the far away places reporting, that is kind of an appreciation of our discussion. And the changing the mind from the breath to the future, and again future to the breath, is the kind of a good relationship, specifically for the youngsters. This is what usually happens. Or elderly people, it is for the past. Younger people, for the future, this thing. So whenever it happened, that our 18 years old guy, he knows very well what is happening. But it is very tiring. It's changing. Object is changing. That means your impermanence is very prominent. Whenever the impermanent becomes prominent, it is suffering. Only way out is you have to go prepared. Otherwise, if you are only with the breath, you can sit longer time. You can have a concentration, but you will be elated to say that I am practicing, very good. But it is not yielding, not giving support to the changing nature. That's why you feel happy. But it's a condition you must have. Yes, I understand it. But once mind come to a certain level, you have to understand mind is jumping from one to the other. You must not welcome them. But it is the nature. That indicates there is no permanent object. There is no permanent benchmark. There is no permanent the assembly point changing. And that itself is suffering. The Buddha says, whenever you are bound to see the changing nature, it is leading to suffering. And you take it as me, then you feel tired, then you feel tense, then you feel frustrated. If you go prepared, you have to understand this is not me, this is not myself. Then you can see, I am so lucky, I can see the changing nature and together with I am suffering from suffering. Ultimately, you get up and go. That is because you claim this as me, mine and myself. So it is not a mistake of the particular yogi, it's a mistake of the teacher. This is the point where the teacher is important, the discussion is important and the inferential knowledge is important, be preparedness is important, but that is the dying thing in the present day Buddhism. So therefore, please go prepared next time, even if you are walking. While walking, sounds can, thoughts can, pain can happen. And mind will be reciprocative from the walking to the thoughts and thought to the walking, future or past. And sitting also there. While you are eating also, the same thing happen. While you are brushing your teeth also, the same thing happen. But you try to avoid it, then you feel self. If you succumb to the situation, it's always changing. It's always like a badminton game. from one racket to the other racket, shuttlecock is jumping up and down. So people are very happy to see how the shuttlecock is going up and down, and that's what the game. But unmindful people, those who do not have a primary object, they don't have that kind of a view, that kind of a perspective. But this perspective is frictional. It is something suffering. Well, that is the preparedness you must have. This is the way mind is advancing according to the three characteristics, impermanent nature and the suffering nature. And if you claim this as me, it is paduttha manasa. If you disclaim or disavow it is pasanna manasa. Pasanna means that glad mind, glad game. If you claim this me and mine, I am suffering, then it is paduttha manasa. It is torturing and trauma. And there's Jean-Paul Sartre used. When you are climbing up a big mountain and look down, you feel fear, trembling, or that some anxiety, not vertigo is the technical term. And there's a mental part, you have not the fear, it's the fear of frightening, threat, that kind of a thing. Whenever someone sees the anicca dukkha, they feel that. Existential fear, but I will show you. No, it is a one word. It is not important. So that is why we are always seeking seclusion, seeking security. Because we often see anicca dukkha and we are finding escapism through the self notion. But you must go prepared. You have to understand this as the non-self characteristics that only prepared people can do. So therefore, we can advise this 18-year-old guy, young meditator, you have seen, you are very skillful to see future planning and the present moment breathing, that's very skillful. And changing from the breath, you can see the breath, the future planning. For the future planning, you can see the breath. That's a kind of a insight. And then you feel tiring, frustrated, and fearful. Then you feel like get up and go, that vertigo. That's one term, and the Buddha himself is using these terms. They are very, very, I am very sharp, I am very, because I am searching and reading these things, and say, psychiatrists are telling like that, God believers are telling like that, Buddha is telling like that, the thinkers, existential thinkers are telling, everyone knows about that. It is not the invention of the Buddha, but the Buddha gave the priority. Buddha gave the highlighting, uttani karoti, and other people just generally mentioning it. And very bright, and I got a very interesting article, and I was searching about, and I got a printout, Shankaracharya's Nirvana Satakam. It's the 100 verse he has written after the demise of the Buddha, 900 years later, and that is how he erased the Buddhism from India, and Nagarjuna he came, because they are this understanding is very clear. It is not limited to the Sutta Nipata. Mano buddhi ahankara chittang chittani naham nocha sarotra jiva nacha grahang na netre. So always he says, it is not me, this is not me, that is not me, that is not me. And he says, I am Shiva. So disclaiming of that frustrated anicca nature and the dukkha nature is the anidassana vinyana. But his basic topic is that. But he says, there is a soul. And the Buddha says, no, don't claim this as a soul. Simple difference, but I mean it's a black and white difference. But so I was searching. So I got this and got a printout. And that is because I discussed it with Pante Gunaratana. We had a 1-hour discussion. We recorded. I put a question to him. I just told Bhante that Venerable Jnanarama never discussed it. Venerable Jnanananda never discussed it. What happened to the Buddhism in India? And one third of the deviation is basically based upon the Adi Shankara teaching. They consider him as the most, recent living feature. And he incorporated Buddhism into the Hindu and absorbed Buddhism into the Hinduism. And this is how it happened. So what he claimed is the suffering and changing nature, disclaim. If you claim this as me and mine, frustration, giving up, fearfulness, or vertigo, everything can happen. So therefore, in the discussion, we must understand what must be our mindset, what must be our prepared mind to go to meditation. In the meditation, everyone is feeling something like that. But how can we digest it? How can we be prepared for that? So therefore, even if you do not have Shankaracharya or this and that, if you keep on practicing, one day your mind itself will assimilate how to disclaim it, how to disavow it. But if it is not happening, the Upanishadhyaya used to say it's utterly teacher is responsible. Because the student has done their task. Now it's a matter of view. It's a matter of preparedness. We call mindset. So that mindset, not in Sinhalese Buddhism. The traditional Buddhism, it is not there. They wanted to have some kind of a consistency, some kind of the existence, sustainability. These are the filthy language they are using in UN. Sustainable development. Sustainable growth. So are we against UN? Are we against the sustainability? We say, don't destroy the world. It knows its sustainability. Humankind has nothing to do. If humankind is forking fingers, it's always, even the earth is suffering. So therefore, I am concluding my remark. I am happy with that 18-year-old meditator. And he has done 2/3 of the task. The last task is not meditation, it's the prepared mind. Just like Girl Guide and the Scouting, be prepared. What is to be prepared? Just to disclaim. Go up to this level and disclaim it. This is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. Then you see, you have seen the truth. That I have to say. Anyone wish to comment on this meditation report?
Thank you, Swaminanda. Yes, and what Swaminanda is saying is very much, brought up for me that he's talking about reporting what, reporting our experience, as if it wasn't, as if we're looking as an objective observer, which I also hear Swaminanda saying to people is, can you look at the experience from as if you're from an outside, objective viewer? So that might be one way to be prepared. Come into the experience looking at yourself as if you're an alien from another planet, observing this strange human being. Wow, this, what is this? What are these human beings like? And just examining, seeing whatever comes up as not you, not who you, not claiming it as yourself, but just observing it objectively. And then the other thing I would want to add to what Mahathera is saying is that you might also relate to yourself that, there's a self, a conventional self that you have that likes to think of the future and plan and so forth. And you might just speak to that self and say, can you wait for some time if the thinking is very busy, I'll take up your thinking later, but now I'm going to experience the present moment and sensations of the body, if it's walking or the breath, and try to incline your mind more towards experientiality, being, rather than doing, where our thinking of the future is, you know, is oriented towards wanting to do something, whereas, you know, what meditation encourages us to be doing in a doing mode, just experiencing what's happening right now in the present moment. So those would be my extra comments that I've so grateful to be learning from Swami Natsa and learning how to understand these things correctly.
So to facilitate and appreciate that young guy, anyone wish to add any comments?
I came across the fact that in some Asian languages, there is just one word for mind and heart. They use the same word. And since we, maybe Westerners, tend to more strictly divide between like mind or cognition and heart and feelings, and would divide between mindfulness and heartfulness, maybe between concentration and metta, or mindfulness and metta meditation. And yeah, I would be interested what your thoughts are about that.
The Abhidharma explains the mind live in the heart, but the Westerners are happy to say it is living in the brain. Because heart transplant can happen, still the person is the same. But the brain transplant is, we have done only partial. Then it is adjusting your personality. And therefore brain is the base. And that's why Achan Brahm is always telling, Western people are thinking the brain is the mind. But the Thailand is using heart and the mind exactly the same. Because in the commentaries, it says the mind remains in the half a cup full of blood. It's always changing in the heart. That is the mind. And recently I see one YouTube, and it says something fabricated further. He says eye, and directly behind there is a pineal gland, the center of the brain. And that is what controlling the heart, the pacemaker. When the heart is not working, they plant a pacemaker. They do what the pineal gland is doing. No one knows what is the pineal gland is. It's in small space. He used to say that whatever you see directly from the eye going to the pineal gland, and according to the heart is increasing the rate or decreasing the rate. That is what the science is telling, but that is not what happens. What is heart is projecting into the pineal gland, what you see is what your heart. The other way, the cycle. So therefore, when you close your eyes, you see light. That light is not the sunlight. The mind made light. But it's not a direct light, it's reflected by a pineal gland, and you see like you see. You see images. And therefore, John Kabat-Zinn used to say, what you see, that you are. And for that, they think heart is the source. And we had a discussion, we had a two-day conference in Toronto, 3 days. First day, I was the main character. And the whole retreat is belong to Achan Brahm. And a lot of scientists came. And ultimately, Achan Brahm did such a thing, he told. These fellows are thinking brain is the mind, but there was a Harvard University guy, he don't have a brain. It's a proven fact. This is the paper. So where is the heart? I mean, where is the mind? And all the scientists were quite upset. Because they are misunderstanding. The brain is the seat. But the Asiatic people, commentaries, they say heart is. I don't know. I am happy with the brain idea. Because brain you can transplant. But the heart you can transplant, it's the same person. You can transplant the blood, still the same person. So therefore, the thing is happening at the heart or brain. Then why I asked the brain scientist, you say the front left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. Right hemisphere controls the left side of the body, and the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body. And the corpus callosum is crossed. And then he says, right side of the brain is controlling the heart. Right side is the brain, the female side of the brain. It is thinking about the system. It's thinking about the aesthetic part. Now we have suppressed it. Because the left side is very rational and calculating and scientific and all the linear kind of thing. And it is not happy with the system approach, it's reductionism. And therefore you are not no more aesthetic. You are no more system approach. You just exploit the world. So therefore balancing never happened. Balancing happened only when the brain is not functioning. Whenever it is functioning, it is imbalance. Usually you are promoting the left brain, teaching, mathematics, drawings, everything. So when the brain is not there, corpus callosum is the half and the left half, the right half is equal. But it's like dead. But there you can understand our feminist character in the masculine body and the masculine character of the feminine body. And then we can understand why the feminism, what the masculinism. That is because we are promoting one side. For the last 40 years, all the females also promoted the masculine characters. They want to have equal rights. It's bad for the earth. Bad for the family. Single parent children. Bad for the children. So my mother and others, they knew it. They always have a submersive characteristic, not the poignant character. Father is the character. Mother is always promoting it. They know they are doing the main task. They are doing the complete job at the home. And whatever the father is earning, she manages and the children caring and everything. But he got a very reputed, aesthetic place at home. But any social event, father is the first. But when I go to West, when I go to so-called developed countries, I can see this. And therefore Dalai Lama used to say, now main hate of the children not going to the father but to the mother. Because mother is playing a big role. So therefore if you do not like to have a world war, mother has to take care about the household peace, then there is no war. So we only males here, therefore there won't be any much of this thing. But if there are females, they will tell him this is feminist, this is a male-dominated kind of a theory. And therefore that means not the heart, brain is the mind. A heart is more feminine. It is system approach. So I also was arguing and telling the better to say mind is resting upon the based upon the mind rather than the heart. But both are available. So therefore we have to understand, the male has to understand we have the feminine characteristic. So when I go and discuss in the Amaravati, all the nuns are very angry with me. Then they tell, don't say male, female, you have to say femininity and masculinity. Then your talk is correct, but don't tell the male and female. Then I'm sorry. That is what I mean. Each male, they have that feminine character. It's female, they have the masculine character. But they are ready to separate it out. I am completely a male. I am not a female. Like the Buddha has explained in the Sanyoga Vyoga Pariyaya Sutta, in Anguttara Nikaya, how the males are promoting male characters and the females are promoting female characters, and then attraction happens, then there is no end to the world. But there are male-like female and female-like males, and they are in between. So in meditation, we make them 50-50. While meditating, we behave like a females. You are not going to the society, whatever is happening, we are eating and just lying down on the earth and sleeping and not forward. It's like a turtle, tugging. And that is what we learn as the female characters. But the yogi is also practicing it like that. Therefore, this is an idea. But I know I am biased. I was thinking that the brain is the mind. But now more and more they are going to say heart is the mind. Heart design, that is what the commentary says. That is why in Thai books, mind and the heart, you said the synonyms. That is what you started, that is the point you started with. So we are not to decide it, but you have to understand this kind of presentations are there. Not they are just theses, not proven facts.
Thank you, Swami Nansa. That's really interesting what you're talking about, all these ways of looking at the heart and the mind and how our whole body is interconnected. It was one of the things that came up for me today was I was wondering, you know, where does the body and the mind, whereas there's no separation, they're totally interconnected. And one other thing I wanted to throw in is that there's a book called My Stroke of Insight.
Stroke of Insight, Jill Taylor.
We have it here. But she had a stroke, and I believe it stopped her, the logical side of her brain.
Short memory.
Now she was just experiencing things like without the logical side of her brain. So that seems to be relevant, you know, to read her book, because she reports about how this how this affected her. I didn't read the book, so I Chandaratana Bhante read it. And have you read it, Swami Nansa?
Yeah. Soon after published, one person came from America, bringing the book and telling, definitely Bhante, you will quote this in your Dhamma talk. And now there's a TED talk.
Yes, she's on TED Talks. I've heard that. One other thing I wanted to, let's see. While I just noticed that, you know, just to my own, what I've seen is in Asia, people tend to be, the males and females tend to be more nurturing. That's what I perceived in spending time in India and in Sri Lanka. It's like people are more generally more balanced and not so aggressive and kind of independent like in America. What I've experienced, people tend to be very individual and independent, and it's just it's interesting. I think that our healthy human potential that we all have when we're born is more like that. It's more balanced. And so, yeah, what Swami Nansa is saying is also, as I really feel, is that our healthy human potential is increased when we meditate, because we're becoming more in tune to both sides of our brain.
That's what we call the not the single parent family. The child must have mother and a father. Then the child growth is natural. But now civilization is leading to the single parent family. The court is always to devotion, and the children must go to either father or mother. They are not together. So what a kind of agony and trauma for the child. It's one of the thing in the adverse childhood experience. But society is promoting divorce, because they are talking only sex. They don't think about the children. I mean, of course, children are the outcome of the sex. But earlier, they were thinking about the children and their harmony. Okay, that's it.
Hey, one more thing, Swami Nansa. I think what a lot of people connect feminism with is the violence towards women all around the world, and child pornography of little girls, and the violence against women. And there, I think part of feminism is to that, you know, to they're thinking that that's male, you know, created violence. But I think just what Swami Nansa is saying is making me realize that this whole conversation is that it's a lot. I mean, I have a feeling that it's more about our society, that it's become so materialistic, and that women are viewed as, you know, just something to use, or to, you know, like violence become, and it's not even that, it's even further into the violence of our whole society of war and you know, killing people and slavery, and so it's goes at a very deep level of our human psyche. But yeah, it's big. It's a bigger question than just, you know, like men against women. It's more our whole society is modern society, the materialistic consumer society that's growing so much that makes people even become like a product that you can just abuse or harm without any care about it. So that's just one more.
The answer also simple, mindfulness. Question is very complicated, the answer is mindfulness. Okay, we are going to the sutta. We are going to start with it, please.
Okay, Swaminathan. The first verse is 935 in the Bhikkhu Bodhi translation, and it says, "Fear has arisen from one who has taken up the rod." Fear has arisen from one who has taken up the rod. See the people engaged in strife. I will tell you of my sense of urgency, how I was stirred by a sense of urgency. As I recall, there is some background that there's the Buddha is seeing all the people fighting and at war, and fear has arisen, and this is where it's coming from. And it, since it's a famous sutta, Bhante, you could give the background.
So this sutta was the context. So first, I'd like to mention that for the last 2 years, we've been really poring through suttas where the Buddha is addressing the devas. So these are quite lofty kind of suttas, quite, you know, they have a special quality to them. Whereas this sutta is kind of coming back to earth of where the Buddha is dealing with a conflict that's going on between different sides of his own family. So this is between the Sakyans and the Koliyans. So they're having a dispute, and what happened was there was a river. And the river moved. It moved from, you know, one bank to another bank. It moved. And so there was a dispute over who had lost land and who had gained land. And so they were going to war, the different clans. And it was going to lead to a large destruction of people and of family members, relatives of the Buddha. So he decided that he would interpose himself between this quarrel. He would try to restrain them. So, if I remember correctly, he kind of gave this from like a position of being like almost floating over the river in between the different armies that were gathering to fight. However, in detail, when you get into the sutta itself, he's talking about the kind of fear that somebody who has taken up an arms, that has done, that is about to be punished by the king, in fact. The context, the actual speech, is actually more taking the position of somebody who's about to be punished by a king and has great fear. That he sees that he has acted in violent ways. And then he sees this mob of people around him who are also about to engage in violent activities. So he sees himself as a sinner who sees other sinners. He has this kind of perspective in this sutta. So it's what I find about this kind of perspective is that it's a very empathic kind of perspective. it's the perspective of a person who has been really shaken up by some events and by world events, by big events happening all around. He's been swept up like a leaf on a storm, and he realizes his fragility as you know, how he can be swept away, and with this kind of great fear, this great spiritual fear, he starts to ask some questions. So then the first verse goes, fear has arisen from one who has taken up the rod. See the people engaged in strife. I will tell you of my sense of urgency, how I was stirred by a sense of urgency. So this samvega, this spiritual fear, is very critical to spiritual development. It is where you see this kind of existential fear, as Bhante was mentioning earlier on about Sartre. So Sartre had a famous book called The Plague, La Peste. And again, it's a book where there's a lot of this spiritual fear. There's a plague, and a whole city has been wiped out by the plague. And so the author or the voice in that book is also somebody who, in that case, he's a doctor, I think. But he has this fear that, well, we can all be, you know, die. So this fear is very important in the spiritual development, where we have a sense of fear. In my own practice, I had a reasonably successful life, but I began thinking, and then what? You know, and then what? So when I met Syada Upandita, then he was at that time talking a lot about investment. You know, how do you invest your life, or how do you invest, you know, in a situation where you will be swept away? So again, the reason I'm mentioning this is that this samvega, this spiritual fear, is very important. So in this case, we have a person who has taken up the rod, meaning weapons, and he sees that other people are engaged in a strife, and then he has a sense of urgency, a spiritual urgency, and he starts to question his whole reality. So in the second verse he goes, having seen the population trembling like fish in a pool with little water, having seen them hostile to one another, fear came upon me. So we can see this when the water drains out of the bath, you know, and everything starts to crowd around the plug hole, then you can see this kind of jostling and hostility, as it were, towards each other. When we see the resources, when we see the decline in the world, but in everybody's life, there's always a decline. There's always the coming to the end of life. So for the mature person, you know, they understand that this is the nature of the world. They have to come to this understanding. They need to accept it, or else they're jostling and fighting around the decline. But this is again a deep sutta, because in a way it's very personal to the Buddha, because it is his own family members who are disputing over this water. So as you can imagine, if the river moves one way or another way, there's a loss and there's a gain, and then there's a question over who owns this land, and they're going to go to war over this. But it's very interesting that in this warring situation, it's the thief that is about to be punished by the king that is having this great samvega. And you know, sometimes when I was studying this sutta, I was thinking, we normally have contempt towards convicts or criminals. And just before I saw the headline this morning that somebody who has been convicted of a lot of criminal behavior, he was the medical doctor to the U.S. Olympic gymnasts. And he had done a lot of sexual, you know, violation on these gymnasts. And he was eventually punished. But he's been stabbed multiple times while in prison. But sometimes we can fail I've taught a lot in prisons, and I've taught meditation to prisoners. And sometimes it can be the most, I've had the most surprising experience with prisoners, that that they've kind of, they can have a kind of a deep existential insight into the world. They can actually have a real hunger to know the Dhamma and ask these kind of questions like, why, you know, they have an urgency, a samvega, and even though they themselves have done crimes, and they see the kind of existential problem in the world. So some come out of prison and they really seek to reform themselves, not just become ordinary citizens, but maybe even become quite spiritually driven in certain ways. I've known two prisoners who became monks. So this verse is something to consider carefully. You know, it's not just a dramatic story, but it is a story that has been repeated throughout time. And it'll be very interesting. Sometimes if you read poetry, the poetry of the soldiers in the First World War is particularly epic in many ways. And it'll be interesting to hear the insights of the people who are currently fighting in the Ukraine war, for instance. You know, so we should not just view this as a kind of a story, but as a recurring drama that happens throughout human existence and civilization, that a criminal can have insight, that these mobs or outbreaks of war can be a complete destruction or breakdown in what we call civilization or in normality. And out of that can arise a kind of a sense of urgency, that you realize that everything is in a flux. And that you know, I see so much in the world now that it's like a glass house. If any circumstances fall out of this very simple, you know, safe little existence, then people are crying and upset and the world falls apart very quickly for them. However, I see in my training as a monk a lot of resilience, and you know, I can tolerate quite a lot of variability or uncertainty, or I don't have the same assumptions. I don't have the same expectations that the world be smooth running. I when change happens, when things go wrong, then I have a way and a means of dealing with that. I don't expect it to be perfect. That's the key thing. I expect it to be impermanent and not fair. So anyway, maybe I should just repeat the first two verses so that Mahatero can add and maybe give us the Sinhalese as well. Fear has arisen from one who has taken up the rod. See the people engaged in strife. I will tell you of my sense of urgency, how I was stirred by a sense of urgency. Having seen the population trembling like fish in a pool with little water, having seen them hostile to one another, fear came upon me.
Thank you. And when Uddarakita is telling, he is much resilience, but for me it is not so. So by associating long time, I feel slowly he's having some kind of a resilience. At the beginning, I found he's such a short-tempered fellow. Never mind, more association will lead to some kind of a resilience. Huh? Never mind, it is not a personal attack. I mean, just a remark. And the next thing is, the base is the Kolya Shakya fighting is a very good background for the sutta. Otherwise, it is Buddha spoken to a imaginary Buddha's questions. That is what the Attakavagga was. Now it's a human. We know, Buddhist, we know the two clans are fighting each other, and the water, blood is more thicker than water. That's the last. That fighting and shedding blood for the water. Rohini Nadi. And Buddha was sitting in between the Nadi. And this is Shakya and this is Kolya. And he says, why you all people are fighting? the blood is thicker than water. And so this is also giving. And the translation, I find two shades of meaning. One thing is the singular, Atta danda bhayang jatang janang pasata medagang. Atma danda hetu kota gena ditta dhammiko ho samparayakavu bhayupana. Atma danda means taken a club to attack. So that means you are taken a club because of fear. And answer is the hate. You have to smash the opposition. So taking a club into your hand itself indicates you are weak and you believe your security is with the hand or the club or the stick or the weapon, whatever it may be. And whenever someone sees the opposition person, the particular person is with a stick or a club, they also develop fear and they also react with other weapons. So, there is one part. You take a club, you take a rod because of your fear. That means your inferiority. And you need weapons for your protection. Just by getting a stick, other party get to say they have declared war, they are with armed. So, we have to get armed and then the rising, the fighting. I used to have a stick in my hand when I am going down. That is not maybe fear. But I take it is as a walking stick. So now imagine a group of monkeys are there. They are minding on their own business. When I am going with the stick, they completely give me rooms. Get aside. Okay. Then I know it. Not only the walking stick. And it indicates sometimes they are a little aggressive. If I going to find a stick nearby, they definitely attack me. If I have a stick and going from the beginning, they completely give a very peaceful room. But if I never find that they are aggressive, they are not giving room. And if I look here and there and get a stick, the main monkey come and attack me. It's a threat. So that is the using the walking stick as a hitting stick. They have accepted the defeat. But if I am finding a stick at the aggressive situation, it's become a challenge. The Sri Lankan politics in recently completely went topsy-turvy because they went to the Colombo and start fighting and chase away the president. And they think they can completely topple the government. And now then it is happening in Iraq, in France, and everywhere. The people are, people went to the White House also during the Donald Trump's time. And that is the aggressivity. It says the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Shudra, Vaishya, four clans. Whenever the Brahmins are controlling the world, it's on the mystics and the superstitious. And during the Buddha's time, Kshatriya became prominent and Brahmana became advisors. And then the next stage is Shudra. Shudra means the business world. When the business world become prominent, even the Brahmana and Kshatriya become dominant. Suppressed. Vaishya, sorry, not the Shudra. Vaishya, now today we are in the business world. And the kings has to surrender. That is how the pharmaceutical industry is controlling the government. And the newspapers are controlling the government. Law. And all the things, business world. And now it is going to the Shudra later. The laborers are fighting. Even revolution, but just like in Russia. That is called Kali Yuga. Kali is the goddess with the and the two skeleton in the hand and the skull. And that is the Kali Yuga. And the Kali Yuga happens, the labor become revolutionary. And that is what the Karl Marx introduced and the Indian revolutionary, how do you call it? Russian. Lenin. And again it went down, business world came, America came, and again now it is trembling. So Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Shudra means untouchables. Now, Wall Street people are known as untouchable. Bloody fellows are controlling everything, no one can sue against. But now what is going to happen is labors are becoming revolutionary, and then that is a chaotic situation. This is how it is happening. So they are always starting with that blood-boiling kind of a talk and revolutionary kind of thing. So we are in such a transition. Upanishad side used to say this is Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means that devil. And the Kali, have you seen the Kali? Have you known Kali? The Kali is the ruling party. And therefore, Brahmins, their theories become null and void. Kshatriya ruling, null and void. Business world also can't do because labors are in the revolution. They think they are the majority. They are being exploited. Now it is our time. But no rule. No, it has become chaotic. Bloodshed. And then weaponry become very prominent because we call revolution. Kalaha and Aragale, in Sri Lankan word, Aragale is fighting. So blood boiling. So the Buddha says, I have seen this as a Buddha to be, and I had the sense of urgence. Why the people are finding the answer external? They never think peace of mind is the answer. They never think the mindfulness is the answer. They think it is very minute, it's insignificant, this mindfulness may be. But what the hell it can do? Because all the people are in riots. And when the George Bush was there in the White House, there were a rally going telling that taxpayers' tax money misused. So he found, he also went there and got the leadership telling, I am also a taxpayer, but the constitution says this and that, it is wrong. So we have to be revolutionary. He is the president, bloody president. He also went to the riots, symbolically, to protect himself. That the worst case is the second George Bush, not the first George Bush. And that is only the start of this way. So Abraham Lincoln stopped the slavery. But you, what is happening now in American situation? All the non-American people came from outside. They are running the show now, and they are calling Black Lives Matters. And in France, the police kill a Romanian boy. The whole France taken by fire, done by thugs. Good, they are waiting. So this is how transition happens. So Buddha says, as an individual, a person with mindfulness, have the bodhicitta, I only feel urged. What can I do? Now I can tell you, now it's very prominent, my brothers and sisters are fighting. I am just sharing with you my sense of urgence. But that is not well translated in the English, but Bhikkhu Bodhi is done, he has done his best. So therefore, we have to understand, now in America, it is called gun culture. Everyone is using. So Amarnath, he became a monk and became a Dhamma Rakita. Today he is not here. The first time he went to the America, he, after a few days, or few retreats time, he told, I don't feel like I am in America. Because we are meeting again and again, Sri Lankan people, we are talking the same language. Because I thought everyone is having a gun and something like this. But America is not that. And people are very peaceful. When you go to the places, the gun culture is not there. But you read the newspaper, so much of serial killing. And present government and Biden or who, whatever may be, they are making issues, guns to be banned or not. But their money is invested on gun manufacturing. Mm-hmm. The Queen's main investment on the weaponry. They are talking to peacemakers. They give Nobel Prize. This is the world. So we have nothing to do, but we are lucky, we are mindful, and the Bodhisattva himself had the sense of urge. How do you call sense of urgency or urge?
Urgency.
And he says, I can share it with you whether it is matter or not. Two times he tried, he was successful. Third time it was a failure. They killed each other.
And he said that the Buddha went out of the way purposely, because he thought, all right, I divided them two times, and they might have their own karma, and I let it be, and I just go out of the way and see what they are doing to each other. I think he said something like this.
That's the last time.
The third time.
The third time. And they started fighting, and that's it. So it's like you have a pimple. So when it's coming, you feel a little ugly. You can put a plaster. When we are going to schools, and still it is coming. When it's erupting, plaster is a problem. You have to remove it. When you are sleeping downward and it's rubbing against the pillow and it's erupt. You can stop at the beginning, you can cover it, but it's a patchwork. So then if the Buddha is omnipotent and omnipresent, why can't he stop it? He says, no. As a bodhisattva, I had my sense of urgency. I can only share with you. Only the people have faith. People believe what the Buddha is telling. And he is not going against the Kama and Kama theory. He has given the message two times. And the third time he is observing upekkha. Metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. Metta is the suffering, the living being, sorry. All the living beings. Karuna is for the suffering portion. And the upekkha, mudita is for the achieved people. When nothing works, upekkha is the... That's why Buddha Rakhidamdro is married to upekkha. You don't know the story. You don't know, never mind. That is personal attack. I am not happy, because otherwise I will be a culprit. No, it is out of the question.
If I say anything, you'll say I'm practicing.
Yeah. So therefore, don't you just forget about that what I mentioned. So he is always talking about the value of upekkha. It's after the metta, karuna, mudita. If it is not working, there's yes, another option. You have to behave like a blind, you have to behave like a deaf, you have to behave like a disabled person or backbone, painful backbone or dead person. So people don't think. They think it is a kind of defensive. This is the inability, that's why the Buddha is going away from the road. But he knew it's about to happen, so he has given the message two times, it was working, but the boiling, the thing is happening, eruption. So then, stop at the Sangvega level, don't act. Vega is the energy. Sangvega is negative kind of energy. You have to remove Sang different and use the energy, that is called diligence. That's called vigilance. You see, completely unfairness happens, so you behave like a rock. Stand fight, or I don't know, you become just a rock. And then you see everything happening. And people think, how can you become, you? If you have empathy, if you have the sympathy, and if you have the compassion, he says, it won't work now. This is to happen. And the present Volvo, it's boiling. So government leaders, they know. They may personally, they do not have it. But this is the way the momentum is developing. One day eruption may take place, just like a volcanic. But Dalai Lama says it will not happen. There are a lot of discussions and a lot of communication happen. So over the table, we can sort it out. But the female voice is very important now. With the household affairs, females have taken the male role, and therefore children hating mother. So mother must be very, very resistant or tolerance or peacemaker, and then the whole family will be at peace, and the society will be at peace. So we are in such a very dramatic, decisive, critical age, but you see, still we can be mindful. That's a miracle. It is not that we are passive. It is not that we are callous. It is not that we know. Everything we know. But still, we try as many as possible metta, whenever possible karuna, whenever possible mudita, and then upekkha. That upekkha have two types, anjana upekkha and upekkha with sati. Sati upekkha parisuddhin chatutajjhana. Anjana upekkha means you hide it because inability. But this upekkha is not. It's fully alert, fully mindful. And that is what the Buddha says, samadhi. sati upekka sama upekka sati parisuddhi chatutta jhana. Not breathing, you are just sitting like a rock, you are aware of it, and upekka is there. That upekka is not a, something inferior. Not you are not withdrawn. You are just open-eyed. You can hear, but behave like a rock. So the Buddha statues like that. It's made out of bricks. Whatever you do, you don't care. So when I was going to my going with my mother, and she's very devoted. And she'd take flowers and kind of thing. And after offering, he's not much educated. When she was climbing down, his nose become, her voice become little heavy. So I am sitting by close and listening to his voice. Me mal monitutu puja veva puja veva puja. So devoted. I am not looking at the Buddha, but I am hearing. I am very young. And when I raised hand, I found a mosquito is on the Buddha statue. Ha! How come that? I went behind the Buddha statue. It was a very big one. And I can't reach the mosquito. And then I told, after worshipping, mother, Amma, me madhuri kohala, Buddha hamdran. And she told, don't worry. This is the statue. Even if the Buddha is living, this is exactly where he is working with the mosquito. What? Even the Buddha is living, he's excited, then I think this is something against the evolutionary theory. You have to kill the mosquito. Otherwise, the malaria. Otherwise, the dengue. At that time, dengue was not there. So I was thinking, she can't explain. I never question. That is what we call callous. But it is not callous. Fully vigilant, fully diligent. Complete unfair situation is happening. You are not withdrawing also. Open-eyed, just be. Be mindful and mind your own business. Very difficult. You feel like unhuman. That's the point. Presently meditators are utterly carried away by compassion. I feel so sorry. I have so much of sangvega about them, just like people with club. People with compassion, exactly they're doing the same mistake. But they think, no, we are out of compassion and we are helping. And I mean, you can do it. Compassion needs sometimes urgency, things happen and you need, I have, I give. Not the organized way. You can do it. Anyone can do it. That's called anukampa. Kampa, according to kampa, anukampa happens. So it happens, but no organized way. But today, mindful societies are utterly taken, carried away by compassion. So I never take membership there. Because I know it won't work. It is like a aesthetic idea. It's a good thing, but it won't work. Then after upekka, you have to go for mudita. Sorry, after karuna, you have to go to mudita. And then upekka is the last resort. But don't start with last resort. Start with metta, karuna, mudita, upekka. And then go to the upekka. Venerable Khemananda wrote a very nice article. Because when I am coming here as a layperson, there was a book publishing about the 40 meditation objects. And I have no any single grammar idea, but they asked me to write start proofreading. And after publishing, I did karuna, metta, karuna, mudita, upekka. At his essay on upekka, it's very balanced. Because he is looking at the upekka from the vipassana point of view. It has not been translated. Maybe in now you know, they have translated Samasatalis Karmasthana. And there I found there are 10 kinds of upekkha. Dasa upekkha in Visuddhi Magga. This is called Brahmacharya upekkha. But upekkha satiparisuddhi chatutta jhana, very good foundation for the vipassana. So therefore this translation is not covering the whole story, but fairly done a good job. That's it. We have 5 minutes more. Anyone, do you have, he's a new member, he's coming from India. And he met Venerable Chandaratana, I think, hope, in the last retreat. And came, he was in Nathagani last time, I brought him. And I would like to listen to your voice. Have any comments?
What should I say, Vante?
You have to tell something. You are coming from India, your place is the Buddha's place, and you don't have any Buddhism in India, but you people are sacrificing whole life as a monk. So it's a good example for us.
Yeah. Actually, before I become a monk, I was practicing Goenka tradition meditation. So when I was 22 years old, I started practicing Vipassana meditation from
2 years?
22 years. Yeah. Now I am 35 years old.
35.
Yeah.
So Buddha enlightened it at the age 35. That's time of maturing. Yeah. I don't know whether you are already enlightened, but I am telling just.
Yeah, so it took like to understand, to pass the hurdle of household life, to take a decision, firm decision to become a monk and practice diligently in this very life. So the more I attend the retreat and more I close my eyes and go inside to explore body and mind, I get the answer. And so Buddha said, Suakhato Bhagavata Dhamma. Once I close my eyes and start looking inside, everything is very well explained. Pachitang Vedita Bhuvinyo Iti. So I understand Dhamma.
So how is your understanding about the Pali verses? You have any organic understanding about what the Buddha says? Atta danda bhayam jatam? Or Sanskrit?
No Sanskrit.
It is not your mother tongue.
Yeah.
You have to just go through the English version.
Yes.
So that is exactly the way we are also doing.
Yeah.
Smith, any comments?
Any comments? Well, one thing is, last time I was here was 11 years ago, and so there's been a lot of big changes with the buildings and stuff, so it's very exciting. And I understand that there's been many meditation retreats with many people, so that's wonderful. And then hearing about your work with the young people, with the mindfulness, so exciting. So I'm really glad that all these things are happening and that more people are able to meditate with good, skillful instruction. So I did have a question about bare attention. So what is there a Pali expression for that? And what does bare attention mean? And how do I develop it? And what might the results be from practicing it?
The idea, the bare attention presented by Venerable Jnanaponika in the book Power of Mindfulness. And when I was introduced with the book and mindfulness, I would have the kind of a understanding why you're taking the mindfulness as such. Bare attention is still lower stage, that is the footstep to the mindfulness. And Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote an article telling it is wrong. And he criticized it. And recently, British government sent an indication, bare attention cut off you from the world. Mindfulness also cut off you from the world. You become introvert. You become autistic-like characteristic. So therefore, if you are teaching mindfulness, you have to teach it with compassion. Otherwise, the emotional understanding and emotional literacy is not there. So the writer sent one copy to Bhikkhu Bodhi because he was critical about the bare attention, and sometimes he is not critical about the mindfulness. So Bhikkhu Bodhi sent it to me. Dhammajiva, you are teaching young children and same thing happening in UK. Don't you introduce compassion to the children? I was cautious. Now, I found a lot of references, mindfulness with wisdom. Sati sampajanya. So I am coming back to the bare attention. Bare attention is still lower level of the mindfulness that is any interfaith people can practice. Mindfulness as such, little bit religious. So in order to de-religionization or disorganize, he put one step below. And some people through the bare attention can understand the Buddhist path, and other people can use it as the worldly development. Bare attention means you are not premeditated ideas. you just be aware what is here and now. And so it's a human, it's a birthright of human beings. But we think bare attention is very simple and unwanted. We must have opinions, we must have formulas, we must have preconceived ideas, we must have conventional ideas. The Vinoba Jnanaponik is telling everything you can do it, but at least understand the bare attention as it is. So then it was a very good mindset for you to understand the mindfulness. So I was discussing with Venerable Dhammika, but not with the particular question. But when I'm introducing mindfulness for the children, I introduce bare attention. But Buddhists understand this as mindfulness. It's good for me. But I can't introduce mindfulness to the Sri Lankan school community because 30% not Buddhist. So Taradi Melli was the secretary earlier to the education ministry. He told Bante, don't introduce mindfulness. Once a step below, he's having two options. Either go with the religious mindfulness way or taken up with the bare attention, just like John Kabat-Zinn and all the kind of thing. So far, so my attention is okay. I mean, I am be successful. Buddhists are misunderstanding bare attention as mindfulness. I am forcing to people to understand mindfulness as bare attention. So therefore, teaching mindfulness and mindful teaching. Two things. Any subject you can teach mindfully. Or you can teach mindfulness as a subject. So Tara told, don't touch it. Let the bare attention run. Let the bare attention make the groundwork. And when the country is prepared, then we can see there's a direct subject of mindfulness and this is the path, the Satipatthana method. If you like, you can go. But preparation. And Catholic Church, really, really tackling it. And they are taking all the stories, Zen stories and everything. They are adjusting it into the Catholic religion, and Sri Lankan bishops, three generations now, they are incorporating Buddhist values to their cultural values and try to adjust into. So then Dalai Lama says, if at all the inside meditation is losing the grip from the Theravada, the next group is Catholic Church. They are adjusting. I thought the Hindus will tackle it. The Hindu is the most close by. And that is what the Narendra Modi also believing. But Catholic Church is very advanced. So they are going with bare attention because they are not religious. They say the God can withstand with the bare attention rather than mindfulness. So it is a kind of a adjustment, kind of a the camouflage. Yes.
So do I get it right? The mindfulness is bare attention plus wisdom.
Still not. The later mindfulness has to cope up with either compassion or wisdom. And we have enough tasks because many people are already coupled with compassion. Yeah, I include Bhikkhu Bodhi also in the wrong way. But I'm not arguing with him because he is very helpful for me. So I am telling Bhante, your advice is okay, but I am very happy with the Sati Sampajanya Sutta. Then the Buddha says, if you do not have Sati Sampajanya, mindfulness with the wisdom, you don't have moral shame and the moral fear. We'll take to the next day. It's a good point. Thank you very much for the participation. We are going for the Pindapatha. Thank you.